My guest today is a journalist, a lover of stories and of the land, a grand listener and a good friend to many, and I have the good fortune to be among those many friends. You know her as the host over the years of Morningside, Sounds Like Canada, This Morning, and currently The Next Chapter, a program dedicated to Canadian writers and writing. These days, she brings her ear and her large heart to a conversation among Canadians and the First Peoples of this land, a conversation we now call reconciliation. She's been named an honorary witness to the important and restorative work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada. Friends, comrades, Sheila Rogers.
And you've got my ear, definitely. Hi, Wayne.
Sheila, how are you? Hello.
Well, I'm feeling a little bit like I'm at my funeral or something, but just having heard your introduction. But I'm really well. Thank you. And I'm delighted to be talking to you again.
Well, by happy coincidence, you and I share two passions. One is this work that's going on with residential schools and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and the other is books. So I'm hoping we can talk at least a little bit about books.
You bet.
And about Truth and Reconciliation. I had lunch with Sean Atleo, the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, last week, and we got talking about Nanaimo and a letter to the editor in the Nanaimo Daily News. You were part of that, weren't you, on the 30th?
Yes, I remember that, and it was really shocking. Although at the same time, Wayne, I think if it's out there, you want to be able to lance the boil, you know? And I think as shocking as Don Olson's letter to the editor was, I don't even know who Don Olson is, by the way, but you know, he signed his letter, and I was surprised that it was printed, because it was hateful. But what it has led to is meetings in safe, secure places with the national chief, with the editor, with the head of Vancouver Island University, with interested people, and people are alert to this now, that this can't continue, and we have to get to know each other. I think so much of this comes out of fear and definitely ignorance that was part of the system, our school system. We weren't taught about residential school. I'm speaking about non-Aboriginal schools, of course, but public schools in Canada, and as Murray Sinclair, the chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, says a lot, while Aboriginal kids were being taught in residential school that they were inferior, so were non-Aboriginal kids being taught that Aboriginal kids were inferior. So we're starting on such an uneven footing just to try to level the ground, the land that, thank goodness, because of the generosity of First Peoples, we share. We've got we've just got to make sure. I keep thinking of a broken vase or some kind of vessel that's just shattered, and we need to put it together. It will never be the same as it first was, but maybe we can make it into some kind of whole again, and then live with some kind of integrity on this land. And yeah, that episode in Nanaimo was so interesting. It was, you know, what's called these days a teachable moment.
Yes.
But I just thought, you know, when I heard about the meeting at Vancouver Island University behind closed doors, people talking in a place that, I mean, I gather, I wasn't at the meeting, but it was extremely respectful. And this is where it has to start, where we greet each other as full human beings, and then we sit down and we really listen to each other. I think that has to happen in a place where the atmosphere isn't charged, and I think universities are really perfect settings for it.
Yes, and you said this is the place to start, and that's why I started with it, because this was a letter. I should probably give some context here, a letter in the newspaper, which displayed some ignorance about Aboriginal culture, saying that it hadn't really ever created anything or contributed anything, that these were just almost non-cultures, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, very, very well put.
Yes,
yeah.
And of course, we do ourselves a disservice, I think, to just pretend that these ideas or these beliefs don't exist, and you start from there and you have a dialogue and a discussion and come to some understanding. And Sheila, you've made a life really out of conversations, listening, dialogue, and this is what this is, isn't it?
It's funny you say that, because as I think back to who I was in my high school self, I was so nervous to ask questions. I'd write questions down on the last page of my binder and then go home and think about the questions that I hadn't asked. And I would ask my parents, or I'd try to do some kind of research to answer them myself, but I just couldn't even put my hand up. I was painfully shy. And part of the reason I was so shy was because I blushed really, really easily. I still do. But I felt every time I got up, my face would turn so red, kids would laugh. And I just wanted to stay seated and quiet. But something that I've learned, and really the person I learned it most, the best from, was Peter Zosky. And really, it's your job. He used to say, you're both in a canoe. You steer, the guest paddles. And it's true. I think the best thing that a host on the radio can do, or an interviewer can do, is find the right question that's big and broad and open and invites your guest to tell a story. And I feel really lucky that for most of my working life, I've been able to hear people's stories. It's just, and now I get paid to read them as well. So I do feel like a very lucky person, and I kind of feel this is probably my last act at the CBC. I think it's act three, and I don't know when the climax comes, but I'm certainly enjoying it. It's really, talking to Canadian writers has just been, I mean, the scene is so alive, so vibrant right now. That, just getting paid to read, I still can't believe it, is just such a privilege.
Well, let me indulge myself here.
Please.
I have the mic. I first came to know you, or to know of you, as a jazz program host. Do you remember those days?
I do, and that's a long time ago.
I know, and I used to pull over. I'd be out driving, and you'd come on, and I would pull over and sit in a parking lot somewhere. I remember this quite well, and just listen to the music and listen to your voice. You have the best voice in radio. It was mesmerizing.
Oh, that was nice of you to say. I have to say, I love listening to radio in a car. I just love that companionability, and I love that connection, and I love late night radio and the hosts that are on. They're different people. They're from a different spaceship, and I think they connect so beautifully to the people who are out in the night.
But you went from that to doing, of course, taking over for Peter Zosky and doing that program as well, and a series of others. Now you're doing a program on Canadian writers and writing. How does that work exactly? What is the, let us in on that. Is this simply a series of happy coincidences or accidents?
No, they may even be unhappy coincidences. I finished Sounds Like Canada, and I felt things were really changing at the CBC, the interviews. The people who were running the joint at the time wanted shorter interviews, and I'm not really a short-form interviewer. I know that about myself. And I felt, well, maybe it's just time to move on and create some space. Space was created for me by other people along the line. And lo and behold, you know, there's Gian Gomeshi, and he's become, an international star on the radio. But I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, Wayne, and then management changed over the course of this particular summer, and I was invited to submit a few proposals, one of which became the next chapter. And I've always loved talking to writers. I love talking to people who are observing things so finely in our society and our domestic lives, and I also really love talking to the people who are blowing them up. And finding new forms and new counterpoint. And so having this position, I'm a producer on the program with two other people, one of whom I've worked with for a really long time, for 12 years, Jacqueline Kirk, and the other is Aaron Noel, who used to work on a program called Go with Brent Bambury, and they used like they saturated that program with sound. And Aaron has brought a wonderful living wall of sound to our program, and changed the whole whole texture of it. And she's I guess about 30. So we've got her perspective. She hears music differently. She reads differently. And I think we're a really good combination. We certainly work very well together. And generally, I guess I read 3 books a week, and I don't read them the way I would be reading a book for pleasure. I'm looking for themes and things that will yield a good conversation. And sometimes, I'm not going to name any titles in particular, but people will come up to me and say, oh, I heard that conversation, and I thought the book was going to be great. And it isn't. It sucks. But my job, first and foremost, is to be the host of a radio program. And I realize that, you know, there's a responsibility. We choose our books very carefully, that we really believe in the books that we put on. But not all of them is everybody's greatest work. There's no question. But I'm looking for conversation first, and I'm looking for people who are trying things and maybe risking to fail, but people who are really pushing the sort of standard literary forms around. And not everyone's an experimenter, but I think anyone who writes a book takes an enormous risk, and we can just start there.
Well, right now I'm reading P.G. Woodhouse, Right Ho Jeeves, so there's some heavy-duty literature for you.
I love that.
I love it too. So what are you reading, Sheila? What's on your bedstand today?
Okay, I can tell. I've just pulled them out. There's a book that I love going into a bookstore, Wayne, and saying to trusted booksellers, I want something that changed your life, or a book that you think is going to change my life. And then the bookseller, Ben McNally, for instance, who used to work at Nicholas Hoare Books and now has his own store in Toronto. Yeah, he gave me a copy of The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov. And I got to say, I it's not standard reading for me. I read Canadian books, and I have for probably 2 decades now. And it was so interesting to just, you know, to go to Russia to this sort of surreal existence. And there's another person I really, really like in Toronto who works at Type Books, and his name is Kyle. And Kyle recommended The Dinner by Herman Koch, K-O-C-H, and he's a Dutch novelist. Have you heard of The Dinner?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's being now touted as this year's Gone Girl. So it's a very interesting plot premise where two brothers and their wives are getting together for dinner. One brother is a politician, and everybody knows him, and he's very charming and very suave. The younger brother, you're being fed the story through his eyes, and he is a very unreliable narrator. And I like that too. I love to feel the ground shifting just as you're expecting something. And I thought this was going to be a wry social commentary or comedy of manners, and something very bad has happened in one of these families, and the consequences are going to be far-reaching. The tentacles will stretch into everybody's future, and maybe the only way out of this bad thing is to do another bad thing. So I wasn't what I was expecting at all. I don't want to go any more deeply into the plot, but it sure fooled me, and I love that. Oh, I really love that. I feel sort of bitch slapped by Herman Koch, and I haven't read any reviews. In fact, when Kyle gave me the book, he insisted I take it without the jacket, so I couldn't even read a synopsis. And I trust him that much. I'm reading another book. That's for pleasure. This other book is for work. But boy, is it ever fun to read. It's called Untying the Apron, Daughters Remember Mothers of the 1950s. And it's a series of essays by poets and prose writers and artists from across the country. And, you know, I'm not exactly a daughter of the 50s, but pretty darn close. And, you know, it was the post-war era and everything was gleaming, including the women. And they had to present beautiful meals and have their hair done beautifully and their hosiery straight and all that stuff. But there's an essay that sort of sums it up for me by Sheila Norgate, who's a feminist artist who happens to live on Gabriola Island, as I do. And her essay is about, she's looking at all these pictures of her family, and her mother isn't present. She's not in any of the pictures. I mean, she of course, was the person taking the pictures, but there are sort of wider implications to that. And she was a war bride and not knowing what she would be getting into when she came to Canada. I just want to go back and talk to all these women and say, boy, you know, you were employed during the war, you were doing really valuable work, and then all of a sudden the 50s happened. And you had to stop all of this. You had to become the people who served their men. And in fact, I think even the motto for the women's division of the Royal Canadian Air Force was to serve that men may fly. And that really never stopped.
Sounds like a metaphor.
It really is. So I'm going
gosh.
To...
Gosh.
Yeah, it's really... And there are a lot of... I think there are about 30 contributors to this book. A lot of them are poets. So
I think Diane Schomperlin has a piece
yes,
in it.
Yes, she does.
A fellow Kingstonian. Yeah, I remember her from my Kingston days.
Wow, yeah, she's great. And Judy Fong Bates and Marjorie Doyle from Newfoundland. And it's Laurie Nielsen-Glenn is the editor, and she contributes. And Joanne Page, who's a Kingston poet. And it's really fun to read. And then I usually have three books on the go at a time. And the other book I'm reading is another workbook. It's called The Empty Room, and it's by Lauren B. Davis. And she had a novel nominated a few years ago for a Giller Prize called Our Daily Bread. And this is about a woman who, she wakes up one morning, she's incredibly hungover and really sick, and she's got bruises, and she doesn't know what's happened to her the night before. So it's a woman coming to terms with being an alcoholic. But it's not a dire book. There are a lot of funny parts in it. But overall, it's just it's a really powerful encounter with this woman's psyche. And Lauren delivers. She really delivers. It's wonderful. So those are my three on the go right now. Oh yeah, and this coming Tuesday, I've got to read Daniel David Moses' latest book of poetry, and it's in my computer. I haven't emptied it out yet. So there it is. That's what's on my table right now.
Well, those are excellent picks. They're interesting sounding books, and there we go. Some recommendations. People looking for something to read there.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow, Sheila. I mean, we've been talking for half an hour here. I could keep going on, but I'm trespassing on your time, I think.
Oh, man. That was way too fast, Wayne.
Well, tell me a bit about what you're doing now. When we sign off here and you go out into the world, what's your life looking like these days?
I'm just about to head to Montreal for the Quebec National Gathering of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I'm going to be presenting the French version of Speaking My Truth, which, as you well know, is a collection of essays that are reflections of residential school and on reconciliation as well, which the Aboriginal Healing Foundation shepherded along. And Wayne, as you know, this book has just—it's just been unbelievable. It's got legs like a centipede. I interviewed Mike Degagne, our mutual friend, and then the executive director of the Aboriginal Healing Foundation as his full-time job, now president of Nipissing University. But I interviewed him about this book, which you are so very closely connected to as well. And we did it on the radio, shameless self-promotion. However, you know, we weren't getting any money for it. But something like 1,200 book clubs wrote in and said, oh, yeah, we'd like to talk about that book at our book club. So I've been going around the country speaking to book clubs, children's aid societies, church basements, sometimes even from the pulpit. Last weekend I gave a sermon. Oh, my Lord. Let's just say I gave a talk in the sermon time slot.
Yes, okay.
Probably more accurate. But speaking my truth has kept me really busy. And I'll be presenting one of the things that they do at the TR, the Truth and Reconciliation National Gatherings, is there's a moment called Expressions of Reconciliation, where people place things. It doesn't necessarily have to be a book. It could be a pair of booties that have some kind of significance into a bentwood box. And you get up and say why you feel it's important that this be placed in the box, and then it'll always be part of their documentation. And so the French version of Speaking My Truth, Clamer Ma Vérité, is going to be placed into the bentwood box, and I think that's really wonderful. I think we will probably sneak the Inuktitut version in there as well. And beyond that, I'm heading up to Rankin Inlet the first week of May for Peter Zosky Literacy Initiative, and because those are continuing, and I'm the national chair, so that means I'm always asking people for money. But you know, it's still alive, and we've actually made some money since Peter died, and a lot of people are coming to reading and numeracy and communication through the Peter Zosky Initiative. So I'm happy about that, and I love going north. It will still be winter, but it will be just about 22 hours of daylight. So that'll be great.
And I will mention and put a link up, the Speaking My Truth book.
Oh, great.
Which you mentioned is something that can be had. There's no charge for that. That's available.
Exactly. That's great.
I mean, what kind of deal is that, Sheila? You just make a phone call, send an email, and it shows up magically.
Yep. There's a link, and it's yours. It will land in your hands.
Comes right to your door.
Right to your door. It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. Sheila, thank you so much for giving us your time.
Oh, Wayne, it's so lovely to talk to you. I heard way too much of my own voice, though. Next time the tables will turn, okay?
Okay, it's a
deal. I know you have a book coming out.
I do.
Okay, can't wait.